thank you for supporting this community. Those of you who are doing that just by attending and with your financial help for sure, please continue to do that if you can. And thank you and thank you. Don't buy in. And also don't dismiss. So whatever shows up in your mind stream, in your life stream, down the hallway, across the kitchen table, don't buy into that. Also don't dismiss it or reject it. Don't take any position on anything. It's very difficult to do. That's why we have a practice. That's why we have an awareness practice, so that we can emphasize, strengthen, you could say prioritize, just receiving what shows up in the mind before we immediately turn towards it or turn tail and run or all the other oars in the boat. Don't do anything with it. But that being said, if you need to do something, if something is showing up in such a way that you need to maybe buy into it or agree with it or enforce that or move in that direction, you will know it if the mind is being trained. If you are training your mind to just observe what arises without jumping on it, pouncing on it, shoving it away, distracting yourself from it. This is a talk I've been giving for many, many years with different titles. It's awareness, awareness, awareness. It's about the awareness of what is happening in the sense of just the texture, quality, and frequency or vibration of what arises before you have ideas and concepts that you project onto it that tells you, oh, you have to push on that, or, oh, you have to have more of that, or, oh, this is inconsequential. We can turn away from it. Excuse me. Please don't do that. Please train your mind. You don't have to be a student of mine. You don't have to be a Buddhist. But if you're here, you might have an interest in being a little bit more sane than you already are, a little bit more considerate of the world around you, and not to mention considerate. This doesn't mean agree or buy in. It means just have some consideration for the energy that is moving around in your kitchen or in your mind stream. If you do anything with those thoughts, and I mean this, it's just as strongly as I can say it. If you do anything with those thoughts, accept them, turn away from them, or agree with them, you are empowering an aspect of consciousness. You might as well call it a dictator, because it wants to be in charge. It wants to be the one who decides, makes decisions, and so on. Have you noticed, like, if something comes up in your mind and you tend to buy into it or agree with it, you immediately have all kinds of, it's like a whole army of ideas and concepts and so on that are behind you saying, yes, because of this. Well, she said, well, that's, if she hadn't said that, then I wouldn't be, or if he hadn't done that, it's an army of little tiny politicians all trying to control thoughts. Don't reject the thoughts. That gives them power. Don't agree with the thoughts. That gives them power. And don't turn away from the thoughts. That gives them power. What do you do with it? Receive it. It's like listening to birds, like listening to water in a stream going over the rocks. Excuse me. It's not the same thing, but it's like that. It's that kind of a interest and disinterest at the same time. It's a disinterested curiosity that is there that has a low level of desire that is not about grasping. It's not about grasping, clinging. As soon as you grasp anything, you stop looking at what it is because you have a hold of what you think it is. What it actually is, there's no way you can know what anything is directly. Because if you knew what it was directly, if you fundamentally saw what this was or what this is, you would see that you're not separate from it, and there'd be no more war forever, which is a big statement. You would no longer be in disagreement or agreement with anything. That doesn't mean that you would miss the person next to you who is acting in a violent way or in a dismissive way or is being rude to you. You might even be aware of what's happening there in such a way. Because awareness is primary, because the attitude is there, just receive. Receive. You have all these nerve endings, including the mind, and all of them are obviously receivers. The mind isn't so obviously a receiver, but the mind does not produce anything. Just looks like it. That's why we believe our thoughts, because we think we're thinking. We think, I am thinking, or you're having a feeling. There is a feeling arises in consciousness, but it's not an individual. If you think it is, then what happens? We fight with ourselves, we fight with others, we strategize, we calculate and try to figure out how to control other people or ourselves for that matter. Difficult. And the way I am teaching this, I'm basically saying you can't think your way into this or out of it. You can't figure anything out if you're listening to what's being said here. What can you do? You can be aware of it. Consciousness, the space in which things occur, not the occurrence itself, though that is part of it, but it's the spaciousness around, the space that was there before anything happened, the space that was there, that is there while something is happening, and the space that is there after that event has dissolved. You are that space. But if you're full of hope for better things and fear of terrible things, then you will cover that up. You'll go right on until you get into my age or further, or maybe not so far. And then the body-mind complex, this whole human being form that we take so granted, we get up every morning, we brush our teeth, and you know, we check our eyes to see whatever we're checking. Keep reinforcing that me, I'm here, and this is how I look, and that, well, it's not going to last. This comes apart fast. And why am I laughing? It's because it's so obvious if you look at it. It's so obvious if you just don't do anything but receive, receive, receive. And then this world will tell you what you need to do next. You'll never make another decision again. I don't make decisions. That's not always comfortable. I'm not talking about a God realm where you're suddenly enlightened and you're at peace with everything and all that bullshit. Don't buy into that stuff. What I'm telling you, what I'm saying to you, what I'm suggesting to you is you can see this yourself. You don't even need Buddhism if you need to see what this is. But you may need this 2,500-year-old ancient teaching to get you to just look at the truth. That's all Buddhism does. If it's doing anything, that's all it's doing. And if it's not doing that, it's probably not Buddhism. Even though it might go by that name. So it's done with awareness. We need to see the way we mistrust ourselves, mistrust others, and are paranoid. Paranoid about what someone's doing and what's happening to us and how we're being treated. I'm happy to take questions about any of that right now, and I'm also delighted to continue talking. If you have a question, let me hear it. Yes.
I'm thinking about how I'm frequently looking for a standard to buy into, but I can't ever really find one. So if there were such a thing as a standard, where is it?
There are no standards. As soon as you set up a standard, you set up its opposite, and you empower the opposite. Even if the standard is peace, peace, brother. More?
Even bowing. Now I'm thinking about impermanence.
What about it?
Yeah.
You don't know?
I might. Put something together and ask you.
You might put something together and ask me? Well, that just slipped away, didn't it? There's some impermanence. What do you want to know? What do you want? Fundamentally, what do you want to know?
Where,
and I'll try to help you.
Where do I get the information I need to live my life?
Right here. not this person necessarily, but this part of you, this right here, you find out. It will not arise in the form of thoughts. If it arises at all, it will arise in the form of confidence that's not based on anything. Because you no longer are disregarding that part of your identity that has no location, that is completely spacious and generous and full of wisdom, to use a fancy word. Further question? So the idea there is to, should be, go without saying, turn towards the wall, sit down and find out and look at the distress, look at the discrepancy, look at the confusion. This is what the Buddha did as far as we know. He looked at his mind. And what did he see? He saw suffering. He looked at the world. And he saw suffering. So the first noble truth of this teaching is life is suffering. And why is it suffering? Why is it suffering? Yes, I'm asking, why is it suffering? What's the second noble truth?
We want something different than what's occurring.
Yeah, desire. We whatever's happening, we don't like that, or it's not quite right, and we want to. And how do we work with that? Receive. Just receive it. Whatever shows up, It has a right to be there. It has its own legs. You don't have to empower anything. You don't have to disempower anything. And please don't ignore anything. Just receive it. It may be pretty bad news, and it will be bad news for the ego. It can be extremely scary. It can be extremely uncomfortable. And probably will be. Can be and probably will be on some level. But what you would receive, or what you would receive, or you would receive, or I would receive, is going to show up dependent upon the karma that actually brought you into this human realm in the first place. Here you are. What are you going to do with it? You could do what I did when I was 18, join the Marine Corps. The hell did I do that for? That's what I was asking myself after I got to boot camp and I was starting to get beat up. But the whole world, it all promotes. You know, if someone hears that I was in the military, oh, thank you for your service, and I want to punch him. Why do I say that? Why do I say I want to punch him? I don't really want to punch him. It's just frustrating to see the incredible misunderstanding about that whole situation, about that we have to actually train people to kill other people. Not a good idea to do that. It's probably a good idea to do something about that situation, but training people to kill people and building atomic weapons and so on, this is an avalanche that started a long, long time ago, probably during the Peloponnesian Wars. If you need a source for anything, go there. Questions? Please don't hesitate.
Kundalini, you're saying don't buy in, just observe, and that will help us see not separate. How is that? How does that happen?
It takes time, and so each one of you are different ages, and everyone is born with a combination of causes and conditions we call karma. We call it, you know, it's the color of your skin, the shape of your ears, your tendency to do anything from speak very, very clearly to stutter. All the different variations that are showing up as your personality, your style, and so on. And so your question was?
How does just observing help us see not suffering?
Yes, because if you to go the other way, if you push it down, try to stop it. If you fluff it up or blame someone or try to have a story about why it's happening, Even if it's relatively accurate, what you're doing when you do that is you're avoiding the fundamental nature of reality, which is consciousness only. It's just a space in which things occur, not the things. But the world is all attached to this and attached to that materialism, spiritual materialism, trying to get ahead by using spiritual techniques, get more enlightened. Materialism, just trying to become very, very wealthy so that you live in a penthouse and control everything around you, more or less, with servants and so on. And so by just observing that and not doing anything with the very simple form of that we have of existence, is just sitting still and watching the very simple situation in the mind that grasps, rejects, and shuts down, to observe passion, aggression, and ignorance in the consciousness, so that when the consciousness is more animated in terms of walking around the neighborhood or going to work or building a John Deere tractor, that you're leading with your awareness, not with your thought process. The thought process will take over based on the fear that is deep in the ego, that feels like something is amiss, something is, someone's not respecting me, I don't have enough control, something bad is going to happen, and so on. So by emphasizing, come back to your question, by emphasizing the space in which the thoughts, the emotions appear, we slowly are changing our allegiance over from this kind of activity, this kind of activity, and this kind of activity to just receive. Just receive. How does that feel? It sucks. Because quite often what happens is when we start to practice and meditate, we start to, just by nature of the exercise, we start to receive things we've been able to push away for 20 years, 18 years, 38 years, 56 years. We start to really get to know ourselves. We get to know, when we say ourselves, we're saying the structure that shows up as a temporary apparent identity, which is an illusion. It might take a while to see that the one who is thinking, the one who is feeling, smelling, tasting, rejecting, accepting, shutting down, dismissing, or buying into, to use the talk title, one who's doing that is unreal, and they're functioning out of fear. It's very subtle. Someone who's really terrified and is able to use the samsaric world of plus cause and effect and so on and manipulate that, doesn't even know they're afraid. If you're in here, you probably know quite a bit about fear in here, because you're a meditator. That's one of the things you're going to have to deal with, just fear. Fear of being alone, fear of oblivion, fear of being dismissed, fear of not being valuable. The fear, I could continue, but it's that. So let me go back to your question. By emphasizing the spaciousness, sit still, sit symmetrical. My teacher would say, be genuine. Just this. Nothing else. And if something else comes in, it's welcome. If something else leaves, it's welcome. It's welcome to leave, welcome to stay, welcome. Emphasizing that spaciousness. Eventually, the transition between the identity that grasps and hates and loves and grasps and hates and rejects and grasps, and just, there's so many names for it, begins to change from the imaginary, called, or how is it, parikalpana, imaginary nature, over to seeing paratantra, or the dependent origin, dependent nature, this cause, that cause, that cause, that. This cause, that cause, that cause, that, without any personality particularly, changes over to see what this is fundamentally. It is just space. And this is called, in the Three Natures teaching, called Parinishma. Did I get that right? No? I don't remember things very well. But I remember to come in here. Is that helpful?
Thank you.
Welcome. Udavan,
how do we not buy into the Buddhist concepts? Like, you say no self, but we haven't experienced that directly.
Just observe it. Be an observer. This doesn't mean you're not participating in things, but just receive. Just observe what's coming and going. Just observe it without comment. You're training yourself to do that on the cushion. This is very difficult to do with the intellect. I'm not saying it couldn't be done, maybe, Maybe if you had, if your karma brought you into a, brought your consciousness into a kind of shape that became shapeless and consciousness was still there, then you might be, you might realize your true nature without any practice leading up to it. But probably you will go into some kind of a dynamic where you will practice and practice and practice. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy. Did I answer a question you didn't ask?
No, I think you answered it pretty well.
Oh.
I have a second question, similar.
Wait a minute. What, are you finished with the first one?
I don't know.
What did I say? How did I respond to that question?
Paraphrase. You said to just observe.
Did I say it in that tone of voice?
Just observe.
Yeah. Say that again.
Just observe.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can continue to go into the prisons and teach inmates the Lord. Busy not observing. What's your next question?
I'll have to come back.
Well, if you can come back at the same time, Dion comes back. What's her question? Did you have your question come back?
No, I did not.
Okay. Yes.
Jesus, is not buying into ignorance?
It could show up that way unless you see it as a teaching. So you see something arise that you feel magnetized towards, and you're just not going to buy into that. It's not ignorance. No, it's awareness. Continue.
Jesus, what's that distinction between ignorance and awareness?
Ignorance, you don't realize that there's, that you're, you don't realize you're ignoring it, the situation. You haven't even looked at it. If you don't buy into it, it continues to develop as magnetism or some kind of seduction coming from someplace else pulling on you. And you're aware of the pulling. You're aware that somebody wants, they want to control you. Whereas in ignorance, if it were ignorance, you just would be ignoring. You wouldn't even know this is here. You're ignoring it. And it wouldn't even stay in there. Awareness allows you, you allow yourself to be hooked by anything because you know that there isn't anyone there to be hooked. More in that area if you want to go there. It's done with awareness. It's not done with, you can't think your way inside, outside, around that. But that's what happens in your particular dynamic if you go there with a thought process and try to take it apart. And that works to some extent. It does with the five skandhas, form, feeling, perception, concept, consciousness. But once you see that structure, those set of concepts, then you see that they're not hooked to each other. And when they hook up, we have the illusion of a living being. When they don't hook up, we just have liberation. Form, feeling, perception, concept. Thinking about. And the sense feels. Yes.
And you're bowing. If we have no control, then how does awareness allow us to be hooked or not hooked? It's the word allow.
The word doesn't work real very well. It's just It's more about just don't do anything. And if you do something, then just be observing that movement, that knee-jerk reaction to push on something or pull on something. It takes a while. It can't be done in 30 seconds. Might not be able to do it in 30 years, but you should try anyway because you're not done here. The body, minds come and go. Birth, sickness, old age, and death. Birth, sickness, old age, and death. Birth, a, what's the next one? Sickness. Well, maybe you don't get sick. Maybe you just get hit by a John Deere tractor. So it's about observing that which you actually are, as unborn. It doesn't come into existence unless it comes in with the body that shows up, and consciousness is here with this body. And we kind of assume through our enculturation that we are this, and you have to get a good job, and you have to go to school, and you have to, based on the politics of the experiences that are happening in the particular dynamic that you are in. It was happening in the time of the Buddha. It's happening now. Same kind of insane craziness, trying to control other people, slaves and free people. Even the first democracy, as far as we know, had slaves. Interesting. Anybody studied that?
Mm-hmm. Are you bowing? Is everything you say during one of these Dharma talks a direct teaching?
If there's a student, then there's a teaching. If there's no students, then the whole thing just sounds like wind. Maybe even hot air. I don't know what.
When you buy a little bit ago, you said you can't know anything directly. If you can't know anything directly, then how do we receive your direct teachings?
Just keep receiving. Practice receiving, sitting facing the wall. Just practice on the thoughts that are arising, the emotions, the memories that are arising in your particular mind stream, the sounds that are happening in the room. Practice receiving. Listen, smell, taste, touch, without comment, without adding comments onto it. Just like I've sometimes said, if you sit here in a Dharma talk and you leave having no idea what I've even talked about, that's not a problem. You might have to do some of that before you eventually start seeing and hearing, tasting what this is. Go ahead.
And you're bowing. So should we buy into your direct teachings? Bowing?
I'll buy into anything. Don't believe a word I say. But if you're here, you can consider it and listen. Don't believe it. This is what belief does. It covers up. And people who are teaching, trying to get you to believe things, want to control you. I mean, it might be a fairly gentle way to do it. They might call themselves Buddhists, and they might think that you need to subscribe to this or subscribe to that. Sometimes the precepts are taught that way, that you obey the precepts. Not in this tradition, you don't. You observe them, and you may see how you can't do this one or that one. That's awareness. It's not failure. Right and wrong are handled differently in the teachings of the Buddha, as I understand it.
Earlier when you were talking about looking in the mirror,
yes.
Things you take for granted.
Yes.
It seems like there are certain beliefs that we hold front and center because they play a role in how we understand ourselves or how we think of ourselves. But then there are other beliefs that are just taken for granted. And you would say, well, everyone knows that. You don't even have to think about it.
Yes.
So are beliefs and knowledge even possible? Is that like a sophisticated form of hiding?
Well, it certainly can be. Just once you believe something or think a particular thing is true, all investigation ceases. That's just your go-to. If this happens, that happens, say, well, everybody knows, like you use that phrase, if this is true or that's true. Everybody knows that you have to do this or have to do that. But people who say, believe in God, everybody knows that there's a God. Of course, that's obvious. But that is and it's not that there isn't. I'm not taking any particular position on it. It's the taking a position on anything that gets in the way. So there can be some prejudice happening, some closing up more.
I think that's the part that's intriguing to me, that taking a position when I feel like I know something. Is that possible? Or like, is it even possible to take a position? Or is that just something that I'm telling myself I'm taking a position, but there can actually be no position taking?
If it's the truth, there's no position. But in all of those, everyone has some kind of a modification about how they can work with that or how they can do that. It doesn't give you the kind of the authority to just do whatever the hell you want. More about that if you've got it.
I'm not sure what else to say. I just, every time you talk about knowing, it seems like that's something that isn't actually possible.
Yeah. True knowing is not possible as an instance of knowing. There is either just knowing, and there's no one who knows. If there's someone who knows, we're right back to maybe a high, very highly polished, sophisticated form of relative truth. But it's not wisdom. It may be, you may be Albert Einstein, or what's a really famous person? French Tone? No, not him. Tokugawa, help me out here. The other famous guy or girl?
Willie Nelson.
Huh? What did he say?
Willie Nelson.
Oh, Willie Nelson. He would agree with you, probably. So it's so relative. I mean, it's so, it gets lost in the vast forest of relativity, where we're looking at one tree and another and trying to understand relationships between this and between that. And at the same time, and at any time, when we begin to see that there's no identity that is looking at that forest, we see that there's no, that we're seeing a forest that seems very real. The illusion seems strong and evident and abrupt, and in our, and as Trungpa Rinpoche said in his Sadhana Mahamudra, vividly unreal in emptiness, yet there's still form. So we see that at the same time. It is a way of talking about non-duality, Advaita. It's solid, it's there, and it's vividly unreal. We're doing it at the same time. And the ego mind, the self-centered mind, the narcissistic mind, it can't breathe in that kind of, it can't breathe in that kind of a perception. When consciousness starts to stop covering up his or her or their wisdom, the ego just can't live there. But it can persist as an illusion, then we don't mind. When we see that the ego is an illusion, you don't have to get rid of your ego. It just stops running your life. It might hang around. It might make comments every now and then. What would you do with those? Listen to them. Get rid of the ego. You aren't going to be able to help others with their ego issues if you suddenly become egoless. You know, you don't have an ego anymore, transcended that. No, the ego needs to be right there barking as loud as it wants to. It's relative truth showing up in a vast space of wisdom. You can do that. Yes.
Kelsey Bowen.
Kelsey.
You said that, or I understood from Yamana's question, that if we think we know something, then we stop investigating.
Yes. We believe something or have concluded something. It's not that the conclusion couldn't be relatively pretty accurate, but not necessary. If something is there, you don't necessarily have to conclude anything about it. You can just receive. Go ahead.
Kelsey Valley, is investigating different from receiving?
From the point of view of these teachings, no. This doesn't mean that you don't, after you sit on the cushion for a few hours, you don't get up and go to your desk or your kitchen table or something and sit down with a pad or something and make some notations about concepts and ideas, maybe trying to work on it from a relative or conceptual point of view. You can do that also. That's just what we do in the book studies, where we get together as a group, take a teaching that was maybe 1,000 years old or more, look at that teaching, and then we discuss it. And people are welcome to come and participate in that. And we've been studying Dogen for how many years? We've been studying every Wednesday at noon. We study Dogen Zenji, who lived in the 13th century, who was the founder of this particular Soto lineage of Zen Buddhism. We study it, and we don't come to too many conclusions. Unless we do, we may have some of that happening too. So more about that.
Kelsey Bowen, is investigating then just an openness?
You could say that. It's some curiosity there, but it's not the grasping, grabbing, clawing kind of greed over wanting to get control of everything.
think I do that.
You think you do that?
Yeah.
You know, we all do some of that, and I do that, or I wouldn't know about it. The impulse to push or pull or shut down. I've been doing this since I was born. I'm still doing it. But there's something different about it. Please ask your question.
I'll see that. How do we investigate without grasping?
Just observe the grasp. Not necessarily what is being grasped. Because if you go to what is grasped, then you'll grasp it another way. And then you grasp another way. And then the complications around that whole situation of passion, aggression, and ignorance get filled with ignorance of ignoring that you're grasping. Ignoring that there really isn't a solid self that can grasp anything. That grasping situation is just making use of the nature of consciousness, which always finds its own form. It doesn't look at good and evil. It doesn't look at right and wrong, existence, non-existence. That's why when this body mind of yours or mine drops, you're not going anywhere. Who you are is still here. You may end up not realizing you've just died. Sometimes this is called a ghost. The consciousness is there, still there looking for a lifetime. Or you may realize it. And you may go back into consciousness. And you may come out in another lifetime, you may not. You may go in another direction altogether. When I say you, I'm saying that which is not a self, but has some kind of sovereignty in terms of consciousness. And it's even in that area, it's still conditional. There's still causes and conditions. Impossible thing to figure out. More. Please come in. Make yourself at home. Yes, sir.
Yo, Kabowin, we have some questions from YouTube.
All right.
Martin asks, when I become aware of a thought.
Martin and Bhaktia?
Yes.
See, I can remember stuff.
When I become aware of a thought during meditation, my mind pushes it away and goes in a state of no thoughts. How can I watch thoughts if my mind does that?
That's exactly what you're doing. You're doing it perfectly. Mm-hmm. Just continue to do that. And continue to check in every now and then if you can. Very good. It's very, very good. Just observe that. Nothing to fix, nothing to correct, nothing to advance, nothing to retract. Don't buy in to anything. And that can be very difficult if what is happening in your mind seems like you need to do something about it. You don't. And this, you could say this is trust or the beginning of unconditional confidence beginning to arise because you begin to experience. I hesitate to use that word, but you begin to experience the whole world in your consciousness because you're not separate from it. So everything that happens, Martine, that is happening in you is happening here. It's happening here. All the occurrence is happening everywhere, and it is an illusion. It is not real, but that doesn't mean you don't watch it. It doesn't mean that you don't even enjoy it. And that also doesn't mean that you wouldn't necessarily run the other direction because it's scary. It's not about suddenly just not reacting to anything. No, it's about being aware of whatever occurs, including the reaction.
Yoke Bowing, I have a question from Tom McCauley. Tom Bowing, do we need to be relatively cognizant of the clarity of our intentions in order for our intentions to actually be clear?
Yes. Sit a lot. A lot of time, sit down, hold still, watch the movement. That's simple. It's the simplest form of meditation that I know of. There's some that are extremely complicated. Maybe you need that, maybe you don't. If you're listening to me, then thinking probably it would be good to just sit down and face the wall or face your closet door and hold still, sit symmetrical, and watch what is just described there by Tom or Martine or any of us would describe this. Whatever is happening, if you sit down, hold still, and watch the movement of the mind, whatever is occurring is what you need to see. And it will not last. It especially will not last if you don't buy into it. If you don't dismiss it, and if you don't ignore it. Are there any questions on the Zoom line? There's a...
Yuhun Baoyin.
Zoom windows open. Yes, go ahead, Yuhun.
When we reflect, is that a concern to use our thoughts and concepts, Baoyin?
Again, when we reflect what?
Yes, during our reflection, is that a concern to use my thoughts and the concepts, Baoyin?
If you're here's what I would do is ask you some questions. If you're sitting still, and if your intention is just to observe, you're sitting symmetrical, your eyes are open. I'm not saying they can't close occasionally, of course, where you need to blink. You might need to close your eyes for a while. It's situational. And if your intention through this teaching, through this understanding, something you've been doing for a few years, is just to observe what happens, then anything that happens is appropriate. And it's even appropriate if it arises and you add a thought to this, and then you disagree with this, or you analyze this, or if you buy into it. You may have to buy into it quite a bit to see the way you keep buying into something. Awareness, 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 awareness. Not a success story. There is no success story here. Spiritual path is not about success. It's about the truth. Awareness. Have to be aware. Adriana
Bowing. What's the difference between taking refuge and buying in, Bowing?
You mean the refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha?
Yes.
Yeah, that's buying in. Same thing.
Taking refuge is buying in?
Well, to some extent, what you're doing is you've read the Buddhist teaching, or you've heard a Buddhist teacher, and you're going to get on that boat. So you're going to have to get on some kind of boat. You might as well get on a boat that goes towards the truth rather than a boat that goes in circles and takes your money and controls you and abuses you, which most of the materialistic boats are doing that. So when I say, or when Chokodawa says, don't buy in, it just means look really closely before you do anything. Receive, and see. Do you really have to go through that door? And like I would say to you, do you really have to receive the precepts? I say this to everyone. Don't do this unless you have to. Don't become a monk unless you have to do this. But once you do it, then do it. See the path all the way to the end. As Trungpa Rinpoche once said, better not to begin. Just hang out in samsara. Now, he didn't say this. I'm saying it. Get a good job. Try to get a facelift when you're in your 40s anyway. So you look better, because otherwise you're not really going to get a really good looking partner. We all know that. And then try to find ways to get money and keep it. The good thing is just marry somebody who's rich. I mean, I could go on and on there. So don't do, you are buying in, but what you're doing is you're looking at this, you're looking at the three jewels, refuge in the Buddha, as someone who is sane, no more war with anything. If the Buddha or a Dharma teacher needs anything to be different, they're not a true teacher. This doesn't mean they're dismissive or don't care what happens. No, they might care very, very intensely, but the manipulation is not there. So refuge in the Buddha is someone who's sane. Refuge in the Dharma is the truth that he taught and that was taught by the Buddha's Dharma, which is everything is dependently arisen. Nothing comes from its own side as an individual person. And refuge in the community of people. Here we are. This is a very important part of the three jewels of the practice of the Buddha's Dharma. It's very difficult to do it alone. I don't know if you can do it alone. And if you do it alone, then it's not anyone doing something. It's just your karma has come together in such a bunch that it just explodes into realization, as it did with Ramana Maharshi when he was 18 years old or thereabouts. He just suddenly realized that he's not even alive. And then he went into retreat for 20 years. So you can't get out of the practice area. So don't do it unless you have to. You just recently asked me about that, I seem to recall. And I would say, consider it, look close at it. you'll know, if you look at it closely, you'll know whether you want to proceed to receive the precepts or in our situation, we sow one of these boxes. I used to give the other vow, the five vows, without receiving the Bodhisattva vow. And I think it's good to do all 16 of them. Precepts, that is. But don't do them if you don't have to do it. Don't do it. Do something else. There's no guarantee. There's no promise. Further questions?
You know, Kabawing, if we are buying into fear and able to look at it, is there a courage there, Kabawing?
What is it you want to know?
Will true courage show up without us buying in?
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you want to know, but I would say the way I understand it, I would say yes. Courage is already the case. If you see there's nothing threatened, then it's not even heroic particularly. So it might be heroic if you, in spite of how afraid you are, you march into battle and get killed.
You know, Kabawing, yeah, I was thinking of it in terms of the duality of fear and courage and whether...
No, wait. Fear and courage, those are dualistic to you? I would say courage is fear. It have to be. If there's no fear, then how good is a courage? So when others say fearless, when someone is fearless, it doesn't mean there isn't fear. It just means you're no longer operating. You're no longer buying into that fear in such a way that you will run away from it or ignore it or cover it up, that you receive that fear along with the triggers that are causing the fear. Of course, you could be involved in some kind of a landslide like my father was in the Second World War, where he had to go. He didn't have a voluntary thing. He had to go. And he did not want to go. And he knew, he was a very insightful person, knew that he was not coming back. He told my mother that. He said, I won't be back. And he didn't. He was killed. Yeah, 79 years ago yesterday. March 16th, 1945. Do I have the math right there? 79 years. It's all the mathematicians. Where have all the mathematicians? is that helpful? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
The fearlessness would be you're frightened, but you have a deeper understanding of that goes beyond. Or is also not separate from that which is triggering you or scaring you. You see that is the truth. And we can't see that if there's a strong attachment to the ego that wants to control this and stop this and start that and have a say-so and be respected, have control, or have someone function the way you want them to. Did I answer a question you didn't ask?
Not sure.
That's a good response. Like, I might use that. That'd be a good talk title. I'm not sure.
There's a question from Stephanie in Grand Rapids.
Stephanie Squibb?
Yes.
Hi, Stephanie Squibb.
Stephanie Bowing, there is so much talk and focus on healing. Is there anything here that needs to be healed, Bowing?
I'm not against that. People want to talk that way about healing. I think healing applies, and especially physical areas and some mental health situations, that very much can be helpful to working with them that way. But I just don't use that because we do healing then. that kind of, then we try to look for getting better or look, and the problem, the issue isn't just an infected wound on your arm that has to heal and get better. You're not just looking at this situation right now, even though it's available everywhere in all and every location at every time. The fundamental understanding seems to be necessary to actually look at the situation without coming to conclusions or analysis about, am I healing or are things getting better? Because it might not be time for that. This healing might take decades and decades, but you wouldn't call it healing because it might go into very, very deep, dark areas first. Go there. And as long as I'm here, I will help you do that. I won't force you to do it. I will say, you don't have to do this. You can go do something else. But if you're going to do it, especially if you're wearing a robe, as you are, go in there all the way. Go in there until everything just falls apart. Let it fall apart. As Coben said, falling apart, falling apart, falling apart. Nothing to do. Everything all at once. This is a realized being who, if I had not met him, I would not be sitting here. Without a doubt.
Yeah, bowing. There's a question from Ross in Ireland. Mm. I'm smiling because St. Patrick's Day today.
Oh, that's right. St. Patrick's Day.
Ross bowing. Is the sense of self that appears in dream the seventh consciousness, or have I got that wrong? Bowing, and he says, "Happy St. Patrick's Day from Ireland."
That's pretty good, isn't it? From Ireland. Thank you, Ross. And so, I would say the differentiation there you're looking for isn't necessarily important. It may show up any number of ways in the dream situation. You have about as much to say about that as you do to say about the actual dream, which you're speaking out of right now, and I'm speaking to you out of a dream, is unreal. It certainly looks convincing, but it's not. Liberate yourself. See what this is. And your question, it's like a teeter-totter or a seesaw. It just... You can go back and forth, and certain times one side seems to be more correct than the other. That's why you don't have to worry about right and wrong, because if you function out of consciousness, there's no way you can do anything harmful to anyone, including yourself. But if you're functioning out of greed, about wanting to be right, wanting to not look bad to others, how would I look? What would people, my mother used to say? When I would do something that was bad, capital B, she would say, "Bobby," that was what I was called. "What will people think?" I remember it put me into an existential crisis. What will people think? I mean it. I really wondered what she meant by what. How could people think about, they don't even know about what I'm doing. So, anyway, I just thought I would share that with you. Thank you for indulging me. Are there further questions?
Yixin bowing.
Yixin.
When courage is fear, there is no more duality. Bowing.
Is that a question or a statement?
Question.
No. That's an answer.
So there is still duality, just for clarification.
What didn't you say when courage is here, there's no more duality?
When courage is a fear, said courage is a fear.
Is a fear.
Yes.
Then there's no more.
Is there still duality?
Well, it depends on the reference. You could say there's a duality in the sense that there's still the illusion of duality, but the believability of it is that you are attached to one side or the other is gone. So your fear is there. You still feel the fear, but the example I often use is like watching a very scary movie. You know it's a movie, but it's still scary. This is a wonderful example of being really afraid of something, but knowing that it's a movie. So you might even say to yourself, we shouldn't be, well, it's just a movie. But it's still you can't quite look at it when certain movies, it's they're so well done that it really gets a hold of you. You can't really watch because the illusion is so powerful that there's something threatened. I can give you a whole list of movies that will do that, but I think you probably already know.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mazuka Bowing, is saying, oh, it's just a movie or that's just unreal. Is that a form of ignorance too?
Well, a little bit. But if you're really looking at it, you probably won't make the statement. Well, you might if you're there with your one of your friends and you're watching a movie and somebody gets really, oh, I can't watch this anymore. I mean, then you might say that, well, it's just a movie. This is something I say to, you know, quite often, it's just a movie. But we can't really watch really, really scary movies because she thinks they're real. Oh yeah. But if it seems real to you, you can't just talk someone out of it particularly, but that wouldn't mean that by saying, well, it's just a movie, that was necessarily ignoring. You might not be as susceptible to that as others.
Yeah. Mazuka Bowing, sometimes if I have an intense emotion or something shows up and a dialogue will show up that says, oh, that's not real. So I'm wondering how to work with that. If that's it seems like a form of either ignorance or aggression.
That's awareness. Nothing more to do. You're already doing it. Just look at it. Receive it. Don't hammer at it and try to change it into something else or try to make that go away. Is there a final question somewhere? Yes, sir.
Seth, you mentioned following your heart. And in some Buddhist teachings, they talk about, or is talked about, being on the path.
About what?
Being on the path.
Okay.
Are those two the same thing?
Well, I don't think I said follow your heart. I went like this.
Yes.
But that could be just the upper part of your rib cage.
Okay. Sure.
So, but you can see where you would take what a gesture or something I said and go to something you thought about it.
Yeah. That was like a metaphor.
Yes, we do this constantly, but I was actually talking about this part of the ribcage. You see a little bit what I'm saying. It's a kind of a silly way of talking about it, but it's like, I don't think I've said, at least not recently, follow your heart. Maybe I have. Have I said that? So that's a pretty powerful image. Mm-hmm. The reason I wouldn't say that is it's too filled with a kind of romantic kind of ideas, when ribcage is not. Ribcage is, you know, follow your ribcage. That could be a good talk title. And what is that? I'm just saying just this. It's just this. I could point to over here and say, follow your elbow wherever it goes. Unless you're jabbing someone in the ribs, then you shouldn't do that. So what do you want? What was your name again? I can't.
I'm Seth. Seth.
Seth, okay, Seth, that's right. Thank you. So, Seth, what is it you want to know? Can you ask me a question based on what's the basic thing that you're inquiring about? Rather than set me up for a comparison. Just give me a straight question, please. You can do it.
How do we know we're on our path?
You won't know. Don't say right too quick. If you say, how do we know we're on the path? Did you say our path? And I say, you won't know. And you say, right. I mean, there was not a single space between what I said and your response of right. So if I may offer this to you, that you're asking questions, that when you say right, that's actually closing down what has just been said to you so that you don't have to really look at what I just said. I just said to you, you won't know. And this comes from a half a century of trying to find this out. I'm starting to weep. Why am I starting to weep? Because it's so damn funny. It's funny that something so obvious that you wouldn't see that you're actually stopping a response, me saying something to you, by just saying, well, right. I had a student years ago. She's decided to go another direction with her life. That used to, if you would say something, she, you know, or she'd say something, she'd say, right, right, right. She had to have three rights, not just one. Like yours was very simple. I had to be very astute, you know, very tuned into you to see that that might be a way of avoiding what it is I'm trying to say. You won't know. I'm not saying you, I'm not saying that there isn't a knowing, but it, but you part of it is, it seems to be very weak in that area, the identity part. You following me a little bit? Or are you thinking about stuff? Very good. Thank you so much for that question. And I'd like to say goodbye right now. And thank you all for attending and for your questions.
Hi, my name is Shoka. I am a monk at Sokokoji, where I'm committed to training my mind under the guidance of my teacher, Sokuzan. We rely on your support for our programming, including a scholarship fund to cover living and tuition costs for those who are practicing full-time at the monastery. Thank you for your generosity.